hockey fans, and welcome to the THN's Prospect Podcast. I'm here with prospect guru Ryan Kennedy. On today's edition, we've got an interview with Boston University coach David Quinn. Our 2018 draft spotlight is on Ty Smith of the Spokane Chiefs, and our team spotlight is the Toronto Maple Leafs because they've actually got some prospects who aren't playing on their roster already. But Ryan, as always, let's start off with the headlines, and how can we not start with Swift Current off to a crazy good start in the WHL?
Yeah, they won their first seven games, and there was some pretty good offensive performances within those games. Right now, they're being driven by Tyler Steenbergen and Alexi Heponiemi. Steenbergen, an Arizona Coyotes pick, Heponiemi with the Florida Panthers. And what's interesting to me is neither of these guys has a ton of size. Steenbergen was actually passed over in his first draft year and was taken in 2017 by the Coyotes, but he went from 20 goals in 2016 to 51 in 2017, so clearly there was something there. And with Heponiemi, he's very fun to watch, you know, a dynamic little guy, and he's just continuing what he did last year as well. They're playing on a line with Glenn Godden, a WHL veteran who was originally a St. Louis Blues pick, but they didn't sign him. But so far, the Broncos are full steam ahead.
And news out of Vancouver?
Yeah, Jonathan Dahlin was sent back to Sweden. Originally, some of us thought he might be going to Utica in the AHL, but he has been assigned to Timrå, the team that he played for last year. Now, Timrå is not in the SHL, the highest league in Sweden, but the Allsvenskan, which is the second tier, which is really not that much worse than the SHL, I should point out. But he had basically a point per game there last year playing with Elias Pettersson, who, of course, Vancouver took in the first round this past summer. But Pettersson has moved on. He's with Vaxio Lakers in the SHL. So it's interesting for me, you know, what Dahlin can do without Pettersson. Having said that, Timrå has some pretty nice young players there. Jakob Olofsson and Philip Hollander, they're up for the draft this year. So sort of a fun youth movement with Timrå. And I would expect Dahlin to put up some pretty nice numbers there. But if he doesn't, I think that might be a bit of a concern.
But, I mean, this isn't anything for Canucks fans to worry about, that he wasn't sent to Utica.
No, I don't think so. You know, this is a player they got in the Alex Burrows deal, and, you know, he has some work to do on his game. He's not a fast guy, but he can certainly snipe the puck, and he has great offensive instincts. But I think, you know, there's time, and if he wasn't ready to come over to North America, it certainly happens, and when you're in Sweden, you're playing against really good competition. It's one of the best leagues outside of the NHL, so I don't think it's anything to worry about.
Warren Fogle in the AHL.
Yeah, pretty fun. Carolina Hurricanes prospect playing his first year with AHL Charlotte. 4 goals in his first 2 games. That'll get some attention for you. Fogle, interesting kid, played for St. Andrews College before he ended up going to the University of New Hampshire. They switched over to the OHL, played for Kingston, and then ended up last year with the Erie Otters. Obviously went all the way to the Memorial Cup final where they lost to the hosts from Windsor. But very versatile player. He's got great size. He can play center. He can play wing. He can really rush the puck up the ice and finish. So it's fun to see him off to a good start, and he'll be one to watch the whole season for the Checkers.
Certainly good news for the Carolina Hurricanes, who are beefed up on the back end but could use some help up front.
Yeah, and I mean, the great thing with Fogle is that he has size, and, you know, I'm not sure if he's going to be a center or a winger at the NHL level, but, I mean, Carolina could use some size in their top six, particularly in the future. And right now, they don't have anybody that fits that mold. You know, their best sort of prospect center would be Nicholas Waugh, and he's more of a shutdown guy. He would be more of a Jordan Staal replacement in the long term. So, you know, if Fogle can put something together in the next couple of years, I wonder what his upside may be.
David Quinn runs a crazy good program with Boston University, and he's got some excellent prospects there. Ryan Kennedy caught up with him earlier this week to talk about those prospects and about the program.
Okay, we're here now with Boston University coach David Quinn. David, thanks for doing this. And, you know, the NCAA season has kicked off now. There's a lot of exciting players on your roster, and I think the one player that a lot of people are very interested in is one of the newest and youngest, and that's Brady Tkachuk. What can you say about what Brady brings to your lineup?
Well, Brady certainly brings a presence for sure. I mean, he's got a physical presence. He plays the nasty side of the game. He's got good skills. You certainly know when he's out there, that's for sure. And, you know, he certainly is off to a great start for us.
Now, you've had some pretty highly touted freshmen before that were up for the draft. Jack Eichel comes to mind, obviously. Does that sort of help when you know there's going to be a lot of hype around Brady, just to help him through the process of being a college freshman but also having a lot of outside pressures on him?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, for his sake, it's probably a little comforting knowing that he's in a situation where he knows, obviously, with his dad being a player here and the familiarity he has with the program and the people here, I think it certainly helps him deal with the pressure, the outside pressure that I think every player faces, whether you're draft eligible or not. I mean, a lot of our guys have been drafted, and every guy's trying to get to the National Hockey League. And in the process, you know, there's the external pressure that they all face from, you know, whether it be their parents or their advisors or the internet, which is really wreaking havoc in the hockey world for sure. But, you know, Brady's done a phenomenal job, as has our team in general, just focusing on the task at hand. And it's all about BU hockey. And if they, you know, focus on BU hockey and being the best player they can be and winning championships, everything else will take care of itself.
Perfect. Now, there's so many players on the Terriers that I'm interested in, but the podcast would take all day if I did it. So, you know, the Jake Ottingers of the world, we know them, and Shane Bowers is off to a great start. But one player I wanted to ask you about, he was a fantastic freshman for you last year, and he's already off to a hot start. It's Patrick Harper, a smaller kid but ultra-skilled, came out of the Avon Old Farms program, and he wasn't very highly touted, even though I thought he was very noticeable when he played for Avon. Why do you think Patrick Harper has been so successful in his young NCAA career?
Well, first of all, he's very elusive. He's a great skater. He plays with his head up. He's got great hockey intelligence. He's got great hands. He's got a great shot. And he's a very smart player. He knows how to find open ice. He knows how to slow the game down. You know, on top of having quick hands and a quick feet, he's got a quick mind, and they can all work together. And when that happens, you've got an elite player, and he's certainly off to a great start for us.
Indeed. Now, Patrick Harper is a Nashville Predators prospect, as is Dante Fabbro, and he'll be a key part of your defense corps this year, as he was last year. I'm intrigued because, you know, Charlie McAvoy, obviously playing with the Boston Bruins now, was with the Terriers, you know, great minute-munching defenseman. You have several freshmen who have come in this year on the blue line, and I'm just curious, you know, how you've set things up in what I'll call the post-McAvoy blue line for the Terriers. How did you sort of put things together with the recruits coming in, and what are your sort of expectations for guys like David Ferentz and Cameron Crotty and Casper Kotkaniemi?
Well, we've been very lucky here for a long time. I mean, we've always attracted high-end players, and, you know, obviously it was sad to see Charlie go, but we feel very confident in the group that we have coming back. As you talked about Dante, and we've got Chad Chris and Johnny McLeod and Brandon Hickey and Brian Diffley and Shane Switzer back as well, and then you add, you know, Ferentz and Kotkaniemi and Crotty. I mean, that's a great group of D that we have here, and that's the key to running a successful program. You got to have great players leaving, you got to have great players staying, and you got to have great players coming. And you know that's kind of been the tradition here at BU. We've been very fortunate over the last 50-60 years to be able to do that.
Right. And it must be a bit of a balancing act because, you know, there's only so much ice time out there. And I'm sure you have, even though they're young players and I'm sure they want to be team guys, you know, everybody wants to be out there. Some of them have already been drafted into the NHL. How do you deal with having basically more blue liners than you need on any given night?
Well, it's depth, and it's great to have depth. I mean, it's, you know, the injuries happen, and the game's played at such a high pace with physicality that, injuries are inevitable. And, you know, we understand that, and I think it's great for competition, and it pushes everybody to be at their best on a daily basis. And, you know, it just makes our practices that much better because of the competition. And I think it forces everybody to get better. And, you know, it's our job as a coaching staff to manage the guys that unfortunately aren't in the lineup. from night to night, and that's the responsibility of the coaches, and it's the worst part of the job. But I think what it does is inevitably it pushes everybody to get better.
Excellent. Now, the last player I wanted to ask you about, and this is sort of an intriguing storyline that is still developing, which is that Jordan Greenway, who's been great for the Terriers, great for Team USA internationally, his name has been linked to the U.S. Olympic team as a possibility now that we know that NHLers will not be going to Korea. What are your thoughts on that possibility of Jordan playing for the men's Olympic team this year?
Well, if it happens, it's great, you know, but that's a ways away, and he's doing a good job of focusing on the task at hand here. I mean, he's been battling an illness over the last 10 days, so, you know, it's been a struggle for him, but, you know, that's the challenge. You know, he understands that that's a possibility, but it's not going to be a possibility if he doesn't take care of business daily here and plays well and, you know, puts himself in that position. And if it happens, great. I'd be really happy for him. Any chance you get to play for your country, especially in the Olympics, it's an incredible opportunity. And, you know, but, you know, we're a long ways away from that, and he certainly is a long way from you know, making the Olympic team. And he knows that, and he's just concentrating on, you know, playing well daily and getting better in practice and doing the things that he has to do to become the best player he can be.
Fair enough. Just a couple more questions for you, David. One is about recruiting, and as we've kind of alluded to in this podcast, you guys have done a great job recruiting over the past couple of years during your tenure. But one of the sort of controversial things in recruiting is how young, and I won't name any of the other schools which have been part of this, but we've seen kids as young as 13 make commitments to Division I hockey programs, and a lot of the time these kids don't even end up at those particular schools. They change their minds. But what are your sort of thoughts on recruiting players and how young some of these recruits are at other schools?
Well, nobody likes it. I mean, we sit here and we've got ninth graders and 10th graders that leave, and, you know, we talk about we don't want to do it, but we end up doing it. And, you know, every time I sit here and talk to our staff about, you know what, we're not going to do it anymore, you know, you're talking about the guys that we have had over the last 3 or 4 years that we've committed to when they were young, and they turn out to be great players. So we've been very fortunate in that regard. But it's, you know, unfortunately, it's, you know, what really makes the whole situation, what muddies the situation, is the major junior hockey aspect of college recruiting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with the elite players that are 15 years old and 16 years old, if they don't have an offer in hand, or if they're not in the, you know, in being heavily pursued by colleges, there are greater risks to go play major junior hockey. So that forces all of our hands in recruiting. And, you know, like you said, you know, works out for some, it doesn't work out for others. You know, we've been very fortunate over the last 5 years that we've been, haven't been in that situation. But, you know, it's not fun. It's nerve-wracking, to be honest with you, when you're offering a, you know, $280,000 scholarship to a 14-year-old. Because the kid sitting in front of you isn't going to be the same kid that shows up, and you're hoping and you're banking on him, you know, growing in the right direction, not only athletically but socially and academically.
Right. Yeah. And finally, something I'm just kind of curious about is, you know, building an NCAA schedule. And obviously you have the conference games that are set, but I'm noticing, you know, this year, for example, you guys are taking on the defending champion Denver Pioneers, and that'll be a great challenge for both teams. But what goes into deciding which non-conference teams you're going to play, and what are sort of the benefits of taking on top competition when you don't necessarily have to during the regular season?
Well, I think when you're trying to win national championships, you want to play as tough a schedule as possible. But you also, you know, you got to be cognizant of travel and things along those lines. And, you know, we always try to play as difficult a schedule as possible. I mean, it's the, you know, it's why players come to BU and they want to be challenged. And, you know, you want to play the Denvers of the world because you know they're going to have a great team year in and year out. And it's probably going to be a high-paced game, and it's going to be a competitive game. And you know, you want to be battle-tested when March and April roll around. That's for sure. You don't want the pace of play or the level of play to surprise you when you get deep into the playoffs. And usually, when you play teams like Denver, it's playoff-type hockey, and you know that's why you schedule those games.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for doing this, David, and good luck the rest of the season.
Thanks, Ryan.
Our 2018 draft spotlight this week is going to be on Ty Smith of the Spokane Chiefs, and it's funny, I've been looking at him several times this week because he's in our top 100 under 21 players for our upcoming Prospects Unlimited issue. But Ryan, tell us about Ty Smith.
Yeah, I'll start off the Ty Smith segment with one of my favorite stories. It's not a great story if you're a Saskatoon Blades fan, but otherwise it's very intriguing. So basically, back in 2013, Saskatoon was hosting the Memorial Cup, so as teams do, they were trying to load up. And in doing so, they made a trade with Spokane for left-winger Colin Valcourt. It was for a 2015 first-rounder and a 2013 fifth-round pick. So essentially, what happens is the Blades get swept in the first round of the playoffs by Medicine Hat. They do not win the Memorial Cup. Halifax ends up winning it. That 2015 first-round pick turns out to be a lottery selection. Saskatoon wins the lottery, which means that Spokane gets the number one pick overall. They take Ty Smith, the dynamic defenseman from Alberta. The even worse part of it is that fifth-rounder in 2013 was Kyler Yamamoto.
Ouch.
Who is currently with the Edmonton Oilers. So just a rough, rough break for the Blades there. But for the Spokane Chiefs, obviously it set them up for a lot of success. Smith has delivered as expected. He's not a big defenseman, but as we've said before, that's no longer an issue. What he is a great puck mover, and he can put up points, and he's been very good for the Chiefs in his young career so far.
He's obviously had some international success as well.
He has, and you know, two events stick out for me so far. One is the Youth Olympic Games in 2016, which was a very underrated event in that it was an official IIHF event, so it locked in certain kids for certain countries, and there was a lot of dual citizens, but that's a story for another day. But Ty Smith played for Canada. They ended up losing to an amazing Team USA in the final, like, the amount of names that we still talk about today that were on that team, it was practically the whole squad is now up for the draft. Guys like Bodie Wild, Matias Samuelson, Adam Samuelson, all of them are at the NTDP right now. But Smith was on that team, won silver with Canada. And then this past summer, he won gold at the Ivan Hlinka tournament, which is a great under-18 showcase that happens before the season begins. Canada almost always wins gold because they send their best, and Team USA tends to send kids not affiliated with the NTDP. So it's not necessarily their best players. Having said that, you know, talking to scouts who are at the tournament, they really liked Ty Smith and Ryan Merkley from the Guelph Storm, who are similar defensemen where, you know, they're a little bit undersized, but they're so good handling the puck. And they put points on the board. And what we've seen so far this season with Ty Smith, he's like a point-per-game guy with Spokane. And interestingly enough, Adam Deadmarsh, the former Colorado Avalanche and LA Kings star, he's now doing some video work with Spokane, and I was interviewing him for a special issue we just did that came out about the top 50 players from every franchise.
Top 50 players.
It was top 50, yeah.
It's good plug in there. Anyway.
Thank you, yeah. So I asked him, you know, hey, what do you think of Ty Smith so far? And he was like, well, you know, like on the ice, you can tell he has great poise, but off the ice, he's just a great kid. Mm. And, you know, it's kind of nice to hear that. But I really like what Ty Smith brings to the table, and I think he probably has a shot at being a top 10 pick, depending on how the run of top-end defenseman goes in the draft.
A bit of a departure for Spokane, which is, of course, a defenseman factory, but normally a big defenseman factory.
Yeah, that's true. You know, you're talking about the organization that gave us Jared Cowan, and they've had some other good ones over the years. But they've built something nice there, and it's really kind of too bad for Spokane that Kyler Yamamoto has been doing so well in Edmonton. I'm not sure if he'll get sent back or not after nine games. It's still too early to tell. But you know, you have Smith, you have Yamamoto, and then you have Jared Anderson Dolan, the Los Angeles Kings prospect, who's a great 200-foot player, and he could put points on the board as well. So the Chiefs had something nice. They still have a pretty good team even without Yamamoto. But this would have been a great year for them in terms of like all their guys kind of coming up at the same time. So I guess that's sort of a work in progress depending on what the Oilers do.
Our team spotlight this week as we go reverse alphabetical order is the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I think there's no better place to start than their first round draft pick this year, Timothy Liljegren.
Yeah, Liljegren, really good offensive defenseman. And, you know, we've told the story before in the magazine that he had a really rough draft season back in Sweden. He had mono, took him a while to recover, didn't make Sweden's World Junior team, bounced around to a couple of different clubs, was playing for a Rögle team in Sweden that was, like, not that consistent, and it was really hard for him to sort of find his place. But having said that, you know, there was definitely something there, and the Maple Leafs took a, I wouldn't even say they took a chance on him, but, you know, they took him in the first round, and he's with the Toronto Marlies in the AHL right now. There was some question as to whether he should go back to Sweden to develop, but I think, you know, with being so close to the parent club, I mean, like, literally, the Ricoh Center where the Marlies play is just a really quick drive to the ACC where the Leafs play. The Leafs can keep tabs on Liljegren. You know, there's a bunch of Swedes in the organization already, and a couple more joined in Callie Rosen and Andreas Borgman over the summer. So I think it's a nice sort of resting spot or landing spot for Liljegren. And, you know, there have been some ups and downs already at the rookie tournament that they had in the preseason with Montreal and Ottawa. He had a bit of a nightmare against the Habs prospects. But, you know, his Marlies start has been pretty decent already, and he really gets the puck through to the net, and I think that's a very important skill. And he's got some good competition in the Marlies, so he won't be able to just go in and get whatever ice time he wants. He really will have to earn it.
Yeah, he's not he's the most premier prospect on that Marlies team, but there are some other defensive prospects there.
There are, and, you know, when you look at the Maple Leafs, you can look at their lineup right now and say, okay, they could use another defenseman or two in that top six. And whether they do that via trade or through their own organization is, you know, sort of up to them at this point. But, you know, a couple of the options to keep an eye on are Travis Dermott and Andrew Nielsen. Now, Travis Dermott is a bit of a smaller defenseman, but a great puck mover. You know, came out of the Erie Otters organization and put up a ton of points with guys like Dylan Strome and Connor McDavid. Andrew Nielsen, on the other hand, you know, he's more of a bigger guy. He's not like an elite skater by any stretch of the imagination, but he can put up points, and he's a big body, so a bit of a contrast in styles there. But those are the guys I would look at that would have a genuine chance at maybe getting in some games with the Leafs this year and certainly competing for a spot the year after.
Let's stick with the Marlies and talk about some of the rookies, the AHL rookies who are, have made their appearance so far.
Yeah, and a lot of competition. You know, just because of that, through the first week, some of them hadn't even made their debut yet, but they are on the roster. And some of the new guys include Jeremy Bracco, who is a tremendously gifted offensive player and just an infectious personality. He's the kind of teammate you like to have around. Adam Brooks, who put up huge numbers with the Regina Pats, and Dmytro Timoshov, who had a really good career in the Quebec League. Played for Team Sweden at the World Juniors in the past and ironically had really good chemistry with Alex Nylander, William Nylander's brother. So all of them are in the mix. And then you also have Andreas Johnsson, who's kind of a veteran of the prospect world at this point. But he had a really great first weekend with the Marlies, putting up points. And he's somebody to keep an eye on as well, just because he's got a lot of good quickness and offense.
And let's not forget, of course, about Kasperi Kapanen, who might be an NHLer on some rosters, but is just maybe a subject to numbers games with Toronto.
Very much so. And it's kind of funny, he scored some of the most important goals in the team's you know, recent history, but you're totally right. I mean, the Leafs, it's just a numbers game with them right now. And what I would like to see from Kapanen this year is, if he's going to be with the Marlies long term, is to take a pretty serious leadership role and, you know, help some of the younger guys along. I would think the same goes for Nikita Soshnikov too, who is down there. And again, it's a numbers game. He probably could be a fourth liner with the Leafs if they needed him. But, you know, for those guys and even Kirby Reichel, I think it's a golden opportunity to show the Leafs brass that they are willing to do whatever it takes to get up to that Leafs roster, and playing a big role in the Marlies, I think, would help.
Tell us about Carl Grundstrom, who is ranked as the Leafs' third overall prospect in your book's Future Watch.
Yeah, Carl Grundstrom, kind of a favorite of mine dating back to his draft year. This is a very physical, tenacious winger with some nice offensive components to his game. Came over, played a little bit with the Marlies in the playoffs last year at the end of the year, but he's back with Frölunda in Sweden now. And I'm actually okay with this because I think he has a North American style game already, and he didn't seem bothered by the smaller ice when he came over here last year, so I don't think he needs to adjust the way some European players need to. But he's going back to a Frölunda team that is so good at developing young players. And actually, Rasmus Dahlin, the top prospect for the 2018 draft, is playing for Frölunda again this year, just as an example of the latest that they're churning out. So he'll have a good role with Frölunda, and he'll get some decent ice time. And I think he could probably make the Leafs next year, you know, they're going to have cap issues. They're going to have to make some decisions. And, you know, I think a lot of people have sort of made this parallel that he could be Leo Komarov next year.
Leafs have a couple of prospects to playing junior and college hockey, respectively.
Yeah, in the NCAA, I'm looking at Joseph Wohl, the Boston College netminder, helped Team USA win gold at the World Juniors last year, 6'3". You know, really good at covering the net when he's down in his butterfly. And, you know, playing for the Eagles in Hockey East, he's going to face top-notch competition. He's also going to have a great rivalry with his former NTTP buddy, Jake Ottinger, who is the starting netminder for Boston University. So you got that great Calm Avenue rivalry with two fantastic young goalies. I expect big things out of Wohl. Now, heading over to the OHL, you have a pick from 2017, Emeli Rasinen. This is a 6'7" defenseman from Finland, played for the Kingston Frontenacs last year. He's back with Kingston again this year. He was actually leading them in scoring with 8 points in 6 games. Kid's got a bomb shot. He's very physical. You know, he still has to iron out his game. Yeah, you know, skating is something that he can continue to work on and just sort of putting all the parts of his game together. But he's getting, obviously, great experience with the Frontenacs. And I think we should expect him to have a pretty big year offensively.
Anytime a kid is that big, it takes a little while to get full capacity of your extremities.
Yeah, totally. And it's important to be realistic when it comes to the development curves of players. They're all going to be different. And I think the fact that Rasinen came over here last year to figure out the North American game will really help him in the long run. And I'm not sure if he'll make Finland's World Junior team because they're really loaded on the back end, but he certainly has the chance.
Well, the present is bright for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and it looks like the future is as well. Next week in our draft spotlight, we're going to look at the Tampa Bay Lightning. That's our look around the world of prospects for this week. For Ryan Kennedy, I'm Edward Fraser. Thanks for listening.